artificial intelligence is really just a sophisticated way of saying algorithm.
AI is all the rage these days, and it's even taking over the hiring process.
Essentially, what recruiters are trying to do is understand the huge swaths of data that they have on potential candidates in an instant and drive recommendations for who they should hire, who they should interview, and what kinds of people they should be looking for in the way forward.
That's Dipayan Ghosh, a fellow at the Shorenstein Center at the Harvard Kennedy School. He was also a technology and economic advisor in the Obama White House and more recently worked on privacy policy issues at Facebook. As artificial intelligence, or AI, becomes a more common way of finding and screening job candidates, people like Ghosh are raising some red flags. But first, let's talk about the basics. What kinds of data are these algorithms using and where are they getting it? Ghosh explains.
Data doesn't really have much regulation on it. That's where we have to start. And so what that means is that recruiters can really try to pull data from whatever sources are publicly available and privately available. Now, there are certain laws they have to respect, civil rights laws, for example, but for the most part, they can try to get data from anywhere. This could be from social media, it could be from the broader internet, it could be from data brokers, it could be from former employers. There are all sorts of sources. And when they're able to get more and more information about a particular candidate and drive the development of inferences about that candidate's behaviors and interests through analysis of that data using AI, they can really save some cost in the recruitment process and develop recommendations for candidates that can really do the specialized job in the most effective manner.
And let's talk about the bias that could show up initially, and we've seen the research on this for decades now, that people who have quote-unquote black-sounding names or ethnic-sounding names, for example, depending on what they are, may not get hired, and people who don't are more likely to get the interview. How does that play out in hiring? What's the positive here for using an algorithm if I'm a hiring manager, and what's the drawback?
Yeah, well, Tanzina, I think there is a lot of economic value in this kind of technology because it can cut time costs. The problem is that algorithms, and especially artificial intelligence algorithms, can often exacerbate and perpetuate biases. Because when you are basing your inferences about a set of resumes based on historical data, you can absolutely be furthering the idea that certain candidates are just not good for this company. So, for example, if we are looking at a big bulge bracket bank, perhaps historically their highest performing candidates have looked a particular way, been a certain race, been a certain gender, had a certain level of educational attainment from a certain small set of universities. And if they train their algorithm based on that historical information, then the algorithm is going to think that, hey, it's those candidates that I have to look for, and let's cut out the rest. And so what that means is that we can have huge discriminatory effects against everybody else that deserves for their resume to be looked at, but who don't fit this historical profile and who are essentially being discriminated against. And that is actually illegal. Now, the problem is that these algorithms are proprietary and private, and it's hard for us to have that level of transparency.
But how much of that is I mean, there's the vendor secret sauce, there's the algorithm that they've created, but then there's also my privacy.
Absolutely.
How do those things reconcile?
It up until now, it just doesn't reconcile, and that's the problem that we have. A lot of people don't necessarily want their information to be grabbed by recruiters, whether it's a vendor or a big company trying to look into you and determine whether or not you're a good candidate for a job at a bank or a job at Google or a job at any sort of multinational company. A lot of people just don't want their information to be pulled by these organizations and for their behavior and characteristics and personalities and routines and likes and dislikes and interests and preferences. Many of us don't want that to be on show for recruiters. How do we match that? There's not really a good solution for that. In the United States, we do not have a baseline privacy law. Europe does have a fundamental right to privacy. Europeans do, and many other countries and jurisdictions around the world are now trying to develop something similar. In the United States, we don't. And it's actually a bit of a non-starter here to give the individual, whether it's a voter or a consumer or any potential candidate for a job, it's a tough political battle to sell policymakers and politicians on the idea that privacy is something that deserves respect.
I know it because I covered it many years ago, particularly when there were many efforts in Washington, D.C. to try to pass some sort of policy legislation. And that was under the Obama administration, actually. Has your work at the Obama White House or at Facebook influenced how you look at this today?
Absolutely. While I was in the Obama White House, the Snowden disclosures had just happened. There was a lot of attention on the administration. There was a lot of pressure on America to do something about privacy, or in other words, do something about the breach of trust against Silicon Valley, really, and the American government in light of the tremendously challenging and extensive surveillance programs that America and the National Security Agency were engaging in. And part of our job was to craft a baseline privacy law, which we ultimately called the Consumer Privacy Bill of Rights, an idea crafted by a set of really brilliant minds in the Obama administration, both the first and second terms. And ultimately, the president announced that as a legislative draft, as a discussion draft for the consideration of the U.S. Congress, and released it publicly in early 2015. We released it late on a Friday night because we knew that it was going to be dead on arrival and fall on deaf ears, and was a non-starter at a political level.
So let's talk about where we go from here. Where do hiring managers go? Where do prospective employees go? Where does this, I feel like this technology has, because of a lack of privacy legislation and because of how fast this technology has moved, it almost seems like it's unstoppable.
Yeah, absolutely. And we do need policy change in this country. Let's just talk very briefly about where things are going to go if nothing is done, which is what many people anticipate. If nothing is done, the industry is going to continue to develop artificial intelligence, apply it to recruiting, and will not have any public interest auditing that happens. And so the discrimination problem is not necessarily going to be perpetuated, but very likely will be perpetuated because the public will have no leverage to understand how companies are using these algorithms and making their hiring decisions. That's what's going to happen. How do we move away from a world where we have this opacity in recruiting, which is such an important aspect of society? It's how we win our bread and how we pay for our rent. How do we have fairness in recruiting? Well, the public needs to understand that our data is an extension of ourselves, and it is extraordinarily valuable to corporate interests. It's extraordinarily valuable to foreign actors. It's extraordinarily valuable to almost any entity that might want to know anything about you. And knowing something about you is a tremendously powerful thing in the political context, in the hiring context, in the social media context, where our valuation of these companies has just skyrocketed. And until and unless the American public understands that and understands the value of data and the value of privacy and pushes our politicians for change, for policy change in this area that can really be meaningful and move Congress, nothing is going to happen.
Dipayan Ghosh is a fellow at the Shorenstein Center at the Harvard Kennedy School. Dipayan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.